Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haul-away, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Warning, I've been storing up a lot of profanity over the last couple of weeks.
This week's episode of The Skating Atheist, thank you, is brought to you by Blue Apron, Stamps.com,
no!
And by
what?
Middle Earth's favorite Church of Scientology, the House of Elrond Hubbard. Elrond Hubbard, Eli, thank you. And now, The Skating Atheist.
Hi, I'm Corey from the Brainstorm Podcast, everyone's favorite Canadian skeptical podcast. And even though it took me nearly 4 years to get this recorded and sent to Noah, I still have nothing particularly witty to say except we did in fact evolve from filthy monkey men. And maybe some moose, because, you know, Canada.
It's December 14th.
And suck it, Roy Moore. Suck it hard.
I'm no illusions.
I'm Eli Bosnick.
I'm Heath Enright. New York, New York. Secret Lair, Pennsylvania. This is Skating Atheist.
On this week's episode, Alabama takes out its ponytail and turns out to be super hot all along.
Alex Jones learns the hard way that his android fuck doll is a homosexual.
Yeah, that's a good visual. And Joseph Smith will finally make with the genocide.
But first, the diatribe.
If we take one thing away from all the conservative op-eds about the Masterpiece Cake Shop case, all of the punditry defenses of it, I hope what we take away is that at this point, religion is nothing but organized bigotry. I mean, think about it. If a politician in today's America wants to reach out to his religious base, wants to get them fired up, the best way to do that is to hate. Right, hate black people, hate gay people, hate trans people, hate Muslims. You don't mobilize the evangelical base with promises to help the poor, turn the other cheek, and love thy neighbor. You get out the vote by scaring them that gay people are coming for the Christmas. And this isn't something you can pin on Trump's America either, right? Let's not be so naive. This shit didn't start with Twitter. When George W. was facing re-election 2004 in the middle of an increasingly unpopular war, the Republican get-out-the-vote effort was to get anti-gay marriage amendments on every state ballot they could. And while you're out of voting against the gays, you might as well check the box for that Christian freedom guy who tortures Muslims, right? But I'm not naive enough to think Karl Rove was rewriting the playbook back then either. A listener I met on the Bat Cruise in Austin sent me pictures of a pamphlet distributed back in the 60s by the American Baptist Association that argued forcing states to recognize interracial marriage was against religion and was an anti-religious plot. And quick, somebody dig up George Wallace, ask him if he thinks that was a winning issue. Look, the decision before the court in this case is whether or not we as a society want to continue to let bigotry hide behind a cross. Religious freedom in this case is unabashedly the freedom to discriminate. And you're a goddamn fool, by the way, if you think they're going to stop at gay weddings that want like custom products. And if you don't believe me, let me quote the pamphlet here for you. Quote, prior to this century, neither historical Christianity nor Judaism has held that the integration of the races was necessary to a nation's obeying the laws of God, and the concept and practice of racial integration is heathen in origin and has been primarily promoted by atheism, infidelity, and communism for the past 4,000 years. Communism for 4,000 years. Now, you can plug whatever minority group you want into the crosshairs, and they will. Trust me. Anybody they think they can get away with discriminating against, they're going to discriminate against. And wherever that bigotry goes will be conveniently excused in some interpretation of the Bible. Now, keep in mind, that's a quality unique to holy books. The Quran, the Book of Mormon, the Bible, all of them could theoretically be used to justify pretty much any type of bigotry you wanted. And it's not like that's a common flaw with books in general, right? That's just holy books. You can't do that with Prisoner of Azkaban or Everybody Poops, for example. But every holy book I've read seems almost to go out of its way to keep the hate broad and malleable. Almost like they were designed to do that. And look, from a perspective of social evolution, that's exactly what the holy books were designed to do because that's what the religions were designed to do. You know, even if nobody ever sat in a room and said, how do I make a religion that helps make people hate others? It would have happened through natural selection. I mean, somebody did sit in a room and say that, a lot of people in a lot of rooms, I'm sure. But even if they didn't, it would have been the inevitable result because societies spread best when they can talk the individuals into hating other people near and around them, right? Hating people that are different than them, dehumanizing them when you need their land, dismissing them when they need your help. And it just so happens that religion is really good at doing this regardless of whatever it originally arose for. I mean, maybe back in the day, there were religions that weren't good at otherizing, but that fact alone doomed their adherents to death at the hands of the religious people that were good at that. Right? So we've got this societal man nipple that's been fashioned over thousands of generations to be ever more effective at manipulating us into hating people, you know, turning us against the other and justifying the mistreatment of our fellow humans. And then on the other hand, we've got an increasingly rational, increasingly global society that leaves less and less justification for the hate and the otherization and decreasing amounts of tolerance for it. But luckily for the bigots, we just so happen to have this whole vestigial institution sitting here in the junk drawer in case we someday found a use for it. And now, this is an atheist show, so nobody's going to chime in here and try to argue that there are other uses for religion, too. But even if you could successfully defend that point, it wouldn't fucking matter. The main thing religion does is protect bigotry, and we see that in action in our politics. You can say you care about whatever you want to care about, but when the thing that actually makes you come out and try to affect social change is always bad, you're bad. It doesn't matter if you also do good stuff sometimes. I shouldn't have to say that creating a society-wide judicial safe space for bigots is a bad idea, okay? That's one of those precepts that should never have to be expressed, but it does over and over again. Because sure, Doug Jones squeaked by with a few thousand votes, but we still saw how many Alabamians were willing to overlook some of the most disgusting personal behavior imaginable under the guise of religion. Now, if the religion was really about good morality and shit, that would be a contradiction in terms, right? Vote for the child molester because he's religious? But Roy Moore didn't represent that aspect of the religion. He represented that other, far more important one about protecting the Christian right to bigotry. And in case anyone still wants to make the case for Christianity, I should remind you that I'm judging them by their own standards. They chose this shit. I've seen their fruits, and I know them.
They're talking about your Jesus.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Joining me for headlines tonight are two men who also aren't conceding defeat in the Alabama special election, Heath Enright and Eli Bosnick. Fellas, are you ready to defy the deep state?
One of our lawyers is a Mexican, just for the record. I just wanted everybody to know we have a Mexican lawyer.
Is everyone else just picturing Roy Moore just like clinging to a desk while two aides grab his ankles? Doug Jones is just waiting with a cardboard box filled with pictures of his family and desk toys. No, it's fine. I'll wait. Take your time.
That is absolutely happening right now.
Yeah, no, but there's a gun involved. So I've still got a little celebrating to do. I don't know about you guys. So we're going to take a quick break for a word from this week's first sponsor, Blue Apron.
We wish you would try Blue Apron. We wish you would try Blue Apron. We wish you would try Blue Apron. It's a better way to cook.
Say, Anna Bosnick.
Yes, Eli Bosnick.
Have you ever heard of Blue Apron?
Yeah, we use it all the time. It's literally the only reason you eat anything except Chinese food.
Okay, just the ad for the ad. No.
No. What is it?
Blue Apron delivers fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and step-by-step recipes right to your door. They can be cooked in under 45 minutes. The menu changes every week, and right now, Blue Apron is treating the Scathing Atheist listeners to their first three meals, a $30 value with your first order, if you visit blueapron.com/scathing. So check out this week's menu and get your $30 off with free shipping at blueapron.com/scathing.
Wow, that sounds great if you have a husband who can't even cook white rice.
Okay, you said you liked it al dente.
I lied.
We wish you would try Blue Apron. We wish you would try Blue Apron. We wish you would try Blue Apron. It's a better way to cook.
You like my rice?
You're good at other things.
Like what?
You're funny.
I'll take it.
And now, back to the headlines. In our lead story tonight, Protestants in Alabama prove themselves at least a little less willing to overlook child rape than their international Catholic counterparts. So... I don't want to draw too big a conclusion based on one Senate race, but it turns out the IRA was wrong. Protestantism is better. And we learned that last Tuesday when Dark Horse candidate Doug Jones bested Sassy Horse candidate Roy Moore in a special election in Alabama to see who would take over the seat that Jeff Sessions had vacated.
Those asshole hick pieces of shit.
Eli, that's not what not, it's.
I don't rewrite. I don't care what happened. Those motherfucker.
Oh, well, then you must not have been up till 4 a.m. yesterday. Dude, Jesus Christ. I had a different lead story. Now, I'm happy that Roy Moore lost, rewrites notwithstanding, but I want to stop short of congratulating Alabama like so many others have done for a 0.7% victory on the side of basic human decency. I mean, yeah, they made the right decision ultimately, but when they were offered a xenophobic, race-baiting, misogynistic, theocratic, homophobic, transphobic, racist, anti-abolitionist who was removed from elected office twice for ethics violations and had multiple credible accusations of child molestation against him, they held on to their now wait a second until the kid raping part.
Right, and like just barely with the kid rape part. Like yes. Really... squeaked by on the kid.
Exactly.
Yeah, so good work, I guess. But it was like child molester or Democrat. Too slow.
Yeah,
too
right. Slow. Exactly.
You really got to answer that right away. Can we check Doug Jones' email server? No. It was right away. It was you answer Democrat.
Yeah, so, you know, whatever. Congratulations, Alabama. You pooped in the grown-up potty of politics for once. But we haven't forgotten that your state ranks 44th in public education, 7th in the murder rate, 44th in high school graduation, 47th in average income, 47th in quality of life, 50th in women's rights, and, not coincidentally, first in religiosity.
Look at that.
Yeah. You have the very worst state, and that's in a country where most of the states voted for Donald Trump. So...
You give weird praise, Noah. I want to give you that note now.
I just don't want to make it too easy for him, you know?
Sure.
Now, this may not be over. As of this writing, reports are that Moore will not concede in the race and is demanding a recount, saying, quote, when the vote is this close, it's not over, end quote. An assertion that is disputed by Alabama election law, adding, quote, what we've got to do now is wait on God, end quote. And in that, I agree with him. Just wait on God, Roy. You sit right now. Hold your breath. You'll be right here. And the rest of us can rest assured that you'll be a senator about the same time Jesus returns with that sword in his mouth.
Yeah. And speaking of which, Jill Stein is actually raising money for a really big mouth shield. So. Everybody donate.
I wanted Andrew so badly joke. To create a GoFundMe that was like, get a recount money and do that to Republicans. But Andrew was like, no, it's fraud unless you're political. I don't want to get into it, but the answer was no. It was
emphatic. Emphatic no.
Oh, and then I just give it to a trans teen who's been kicked out of their home. Oh, delicious. And in down underhanded bigots news tonight. As many of our listeners at home and abroad might be aware, last week, Australia legalized gay marriage, throwing pastors into jail, losing critics their job, and skyrocketing rates of child abuse in a matter of weeks.
What?
Oh, the gay marriage. Everyone started fucking their kids that they're allowed to adopt, and everyone who voted no got thrown in jail and they lost their...
Nope. None of that happened.
Really?
No.
None of it?
None of it.
Nope.
Okay, well, wait, what did happen then? Because a lot of people were saying that...
No, just Australian gay people can just get married now.
Oh, like to straight people, like against their will. Okay, so as straight people desperately search
places to each other, just gay dudes getting married to each other if they want.
Yeah, or lesbians.
Right, or lesbians.
Okay, well then I don't understand why anyone cared about it to begin with.
Me neither, bud.
It makes absolutely no sense.
You want to just do your story?
I mean, sure, but it doesn't make sense now. Anyway, okay. So yeah, like gay people can marry each other now. Not sure who cared about that. The opposition were like gay guys who were afraid of commitment, right?
That was not it either. Just do your story, bro.
Okay, fine. Anyway, not everyone is happy about the ruling. Most publicly, Nick and Sarah Jensen. Listeners may remember for promising that if gay marriage passed in Australia,
they would
get a divorce.
That's right. Yes.
And this week they announced, much like certain fundraising platforms, backsies.
Yeah. It's a do-over. The sun was in their eyes. It doesn't count.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Right. No, but the good news is backsies are legal now. They did a referendum.
Okay. Right. So here's the catch to their protest divorce they were planning. See, Australia prohibits legal divorces when the couple still plans to live together and have children and be married. See, the law requires couples to be separated and live apart for a full year before the government will grant a divorce. And Nick and Sarah didn't want to do that. They wanted to burn their marriage license like a freeman on the land burning his social security
card.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, when those gay... capital letter corporate entities are allowed to marry, that ruins the verb for everybody else. That's fair.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah. Almost like this process wasn't designed to facilitate homophobic show tantrums.
Mm. Yeah. Weird. Marriage is so that grandpa can leave your inheritance to a pole dancer named Carol who loves him for his mind. Everybody knows that. So with their protests smashed like their hopes and dreams this week, they offered this public and hopefully final statement. Quote, "My previous public comments regarding civil divorce never envisaged me separating from my wife, but rather our marriage from the state. This legislation currently makes it untenable for us to do this under the law." And here's the part I imagine he screamed through a bedroom door. "The point we were highlighting, and that still stands, however, is the fact that a redefinition of marriage changes the agreement under which we originally married. We will be making no further comment."
Oh, good.
So it's like they're both afraid of the new butt sex requirement. It's going to be an adjustment period. I get it.
Yeah, yeah.
Butt sex, just during your period.
No.
Right? Is that what we were advocating? That's what I'm advocating.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Right. We're not advocating.
See, so often I advocate something on the show and you guys are like, no, you can't say that. It's true about Gorsuch, but that's absolutely a felony. And now we're all on board. And with that, hopefully Nick and Sarah can go back to being those people who people ask, "Hey, weren't you those assholes who said they'd get divorced if other people were allowed to get married and then changed your mind about it at parties?"
Hooray.
And in Schoolhouse Croc News, Betsy DeVos is an ignorant, spoiled reverse centaur who's doing her best to turn the American public school system into a giant Bible seminary.
Isn't she, though?
Yeah, and not surprisingly, that's helping pave the way for Christian fundamentalist groups to sneak into public schools and spread their propaganda. Or, in some cases, apparently be openly invited somehow by those public schools. And one of the worst examples of this that we've seen recently is the Todd Becker Foundation, which performs school assemblies and, of course, cures gay people.
Jesus fucking
Christ. At the assemblies? Because that is a weird hypnotism act. I'm going to call it right. I do a lot of high schools, and that's a weird hypnotism act.
When I count to three, you'll take a penis and like it. Yeah. Ugh. No, it's even worse as a hypnotism act than as an Alabama campaign slogan. Turns
out, yeah. All right, so here's a little background on the Todd Becker Foundation. Todd Becker is a kid who died at age 18 in a tragic car accident that involved alcohol. And that's why everyone needs to stop being gay.
Is it?
The alcohol was homosexual.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so this group goes into schools. They preach about the Bible and apparently argue away the gay. In one of their recent newsletters, they proudly announced how they ended a lesbian relationship. Here's the exact words. Quote, through much more conversation and many tears, one of the girls said, I don't want to be homosexual anymore. I want to become a new creature. However, her partner replied, I'd rather burn in hell forever than be straight. Their lesbian relationship ended that night with one heart surrendered to Christ and one heart still in rebellion towards God. End quote.
And public they school. Bragged about it. Also, we poked a puppy in the eye that night. Little fucker never saw it coming. What the fuck?
Well, now, since she said she wants to be a different creature, she could just want to be a manticore. So I withhold judgment. We don't know.
What a weird weakness is when you're a manticore, though. How do you shave?
Carefully.
Obviously, anyone who's read past the very first right in the bill of those things that we have is aware that this is illegal.
Yeah, it is.
And that's why both the ACLU and the FFRF have both made official complaints about the foundation. Yet somehow they seem to be continuing their operation, arguing that the proselytizing is all spontaneous, student-led conversations, which are totally legal. As in, okay, so that was our song about Leviticus. Everyone spontaneously right now break up into one-on-one preaching pairs. Also, above nothing, we're going to put this big basket of rocks right here at the front of the room and go spontaneous like that.
And now that Eli knows somebody's pulled off a butt sex just naturally came up in conversation with those children defense, I feel like we need to take a moment to talk him down. So we're going to pause for a quick break and hand things over to my lovely wife, Lucinda.
So, man.
A man wrote the Bible.
A whore is what she was.
If it's a legitimate rape,
it makes you a slut, right?
Hey, cooking can be fun.
Hey, I'm proud of a man.
This week in misogyny.
So, Tuesday was a hell of a day. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself here, but it almost felt like the wave broke and started rolling back. Maybe that's wishful thinking, sure. But when's the last time any of us had an excuse for wishful thinking, right? Even that's a small victory in this fucked up year. So yeah, I gritted my teeth through the election results on Tuesday, just sure I was going to have to come on today and channel the fiery rage of 1,000 suns about the goddamn child molester getting elected. But I didn't. At the last minute, the decent human being won, even though he believed in women's reproductive rights. But that wasn't the only good news of the day. Because before the polls closed that day, Merriam-Webster announced their word of the year for 2017, and despite the obituaries for it that have filled my inbox since we started doing this segment, their word of the year this year is feminism. And look, I get the word feminism has become a bit of a taboo. Part of the reason I started this segment was in an effort to rehabilitate it. And from my perspective, it was easy to lose track of the fact that it was really only the word that was suffering. Because a quick glance at 2017 shows that the concept of feminism is stronger than it has ever been. From the record-breaking women's marches that ushered the year in, to the cavalcade of shamed-faced men retreating quietly from the allegations of sexual abuse and harassment that's closing it off, 2017 has shown us the power of feminism. And make no mistake, as narrow as the victory was in Alabama, it was the feminist issues that tipped the balance. And it was the female vote that carried Doug Jones over the finish line. According to Merriam-Webster, feminism was the most looked up word this year on their online dictionary, with searches up 70% from last year. And while I'm sure a good chunk of that was based on shitlords needing it for Twitter fights, there's no doubt that a lot of that is driven by people picking back up that word and wondering why we ever let it get so dusty. Now, I get it. We still have a serial sex abuser in the White House, and Planned Parenthood is picking its way through the legislative equivalent of the Goonies cave. A man with multiple credible child molestation accusations damn near went to the Senate. Women's rights haven't been in this much danger in the U.S. in my lifetime. But like I said, it kind of feels like the wave broke, and maybe 2018 is the year it rolls back.
Thank you, Lucinda. And in With One Arm Tithed Behind Your Back News Tonight, in an effort to retroactively justify how considerate my eulogy won't be, host of the 700 Club and racist droopy dog with the bends, Pat Robertson, took to the airwaves to remind the world that he's still a rapacious, merciless fraud without a shred of compassion for his victims. This was on full display once more when a viewer who was on unemployment called to ask if she still had to give 10% of that money to her church. Guess what he said?
I saw a colored in the front of the bus today.
That's a good guess.
Chinese people don't use lines well.
What does that mean?
I'm not sure either
of those. What do you mean?
What does
it mean? You know exactly. That's the problem. Yes. Everyone pretends they don't know what it means. They know what it means.
So I'm honestly not going to say that either of your answers is worse than what he actually said. So here's a quote. Quote. I think if you do, there's a blessing that God gives. If you do give the 10%, that is. There is a blessing that God gives that will be given to you. So I think if you have unemployment, and I hope you don't have to have it for long, you lazy anchor baby having crack prostitute. That last bit was just implied. Anyway, he continues. But once you have, you want God to prosper you and give you employment. So you have to do something, and you can have funds if you can help others. That's a sentence, by the way. Is it done? Yeah, no. Anyway, he concludes, so we give out that which God's given us. Why not? End quote.
I mean, I get it, though. She's got the unemployment money and the crack whore money. So, like, you know.
This is a weird Patreon pitch, you guys. Can I just give you that note? This is a weird way for us to segue. I mean, I like it, but it's a weird way to segue.
So remember, boys and girls, not only are faith-based initiatives no real substitute for public assistance, but they also actively decrease its effectiveness if you listen to assholes like P-Robes or the dickhead preacher that mentioned what a penny pincher my wife's grandma was in her eulogy. And by the way, on an unrelated note, if Pat Robertson isn't the next serial sexual harasser, it's only because his earlobes have gotten so much wind resistance at this point that he's fucking up his mobility with them. It's so goddamn creepy.
Just walking down a hallway towards his secretary with his hands outstretched, but he's fighting a wind tunnel.
Yeah, no, exactly. Exactly.
His cheek skin and earlobes could land a satellite on reentry. They're getting crazy.
Like, that almost
would be such
hits
a better
earlobe.
Use of them.
Everybody almost wins a taco. That was from a long time ago.
Yeah, it was. It was, but I remember.
Almost all won a taco. And in Muhammad, leader of the Jandals News Tonight. I love this so much.
What?
A substitute teacher in Texas reportedly called the police to report that a six-year-old in her special needs class was a terrorist.
What?
The dumbest thing that's ever happened.
Hey, hello, police. I got an autistic kid. He refuses to look me in the eye. What's he hiding?
Exactly. So, according to the teacher's report, the six-year-old, who has Down syndrome, was saying the words Allah and boom, which is why she went ahead and called the police.
What?
Because I'm guessing this person needed backup for the six-year-old with Downs.
Yeah, right. And then a white kid said bye-bye, so she reported him to the FTC.
Then a black kid offered her a Skittle, and she shot him in the face. It's not clear how quickly she escalates.
So there's just one problem with her story. The little boy who she says said Allah and boom can't speak.
What?
That is a problem.
So the chances that his first words ever were Allah and boom.
Oh my God.
Seem unlikely.
Yes.
Now, to be fair, other reports say that she claimed to the police that he sexually harassed her, which again seems unlikely in a nonverbal six-year-old with Downs.
Police show up. She's got him tied down under the water fountain. He still won't talk. He won't talk. Yeah. You guys,
however,
help.
Despite the insanity of this claim, it didn't stop Child Protective Services from visiting the kid's home, and the CPS investigation now remains open because you can't just be like, oh, sorry, that was a crazy person. So because some crazy asshole substitute teacher didn't like that a kid was named Muhammad, his entire family has to deal with CPS for the foreseeable future. So
Jesus.
Look out for that teacher's run for Senate next year, I guess. I mean, she'll lose, but just barely.
Yeah, yeah, because I hear she had a sexual encounter with a 6-year-old. Fatal.
And finally tonight, from the Gaius Ex Machina file, host of InfoWars, rejected third stooge, and arch nemesis of disgruntled slingshot birds everywhere, Alex Jones, has a new theory about why gay people are a problem for society.
And, boozy brunch.
He Alex Jones puts a lot of work into these, so let's take it seriously.
All right. Oh, okay.
According to Alex Jones, by letting gay people exist, we're already well on our way to teaching our kids to fuck a toaster instead of a person.
That's okay. I feel attacked. Exaggeration.
I feel warm. Almost too warm, but not quite.
That's nice. So, here's how he gets there. Going to connect those dots.
Go right ahead.
During a recent pre-infarction rant that he loves to have, Jones explained that the gay community has a secret plot to make a bunch of money on fuck robots, which is admittedly a great plan.
Yeah, no.
And apparently that entire industry sends all the profits to the big gay bank account that the gay people all have together, I guess. And even worse, Jones is pretty sure that schools are now teaching little kids that there's a new sexual orientation called I like putting my dick inside of a machine.
Okay. But let's be real here for just a second. Sex robots, like real sex robots, they're going to change the game. Okay. I've seen Westworld and it was awesome.
Okay. You have not seen Westworld.
Okay, I have not seen Westworld, but it sounds awesome for the robots. I feel like the awesome okay, well, robots are having a great...
It's not... No, not awesome for the robots.
No. Eli would be the first customer to get kicked out of Westworld for pretending that he was one of the fuckbots.
I'm just painting it all silver. Eli, this isn't how it works. Oh, I am pleasure unit. You're bleeding a lot, pleasure unit.
All right. New show. Also, getting back to Alex Jones, again, really not exaggerating. Here's some of the exact words. Quote, they're now saying sex with machines or sex with cars or sex with appliances. There's a whole big movement where people are marrying their cars, marrying their toasters, marrying their dogs, their cats, their horses. I'm not kidding. End quote.
You're kidding. No, you are kidding.
Ugh, I hate those, your dog is not your baby people. It's like, yeah, my dog's not my baby. Neither is your adopted kid. But I comment that on your Facebook photo and suddenly I'm the bad guy, right?
Yeah, so
it's
like, you are. Well,
that's fair. That's guy. Fair, right?
I don't, you guy. Sound like 147 commenters.
Jones also added, quote, they're catching people in public places trying to have sex with a Ferrari or trying to have sex with a 57 Chevy. I'm not going to get into the details of what they do, but here they are, the details that he's obviously about to give. They lube up the tailpipe and everything, and then the police come up, and there's a guy hunching your car, end quote.
Sir, are you stealing that car?
Yep, stealing it. Please arrest me for stealing this car. He's going to write out the stealing. I want you to see you write stealing on the report. Yeah. And of course, Alex Jones is being persecuted as a result of all this.
Is he?
He further complained, quote, if you don't let somebody have sex with your car, you're a homophobe now. You're a bigot. You're a horrible person. By the way, this is not satire. I'm not kidding here. This is what they're teaching kids now, end quote.
Okay. All right. I'm most of the way convinced. I mean, clearly people are fucking cars and toasters in public and we've got to do something about it. He said it. He made it clear he wasn't kidding. Yeah, no, it was not serious. Satire. But but I'm not sure he's tied this together with gay marriage. I mean, I'm not seeing a cause and effect. Like, I would fuck a car regardless. I was fucking cars before Obergefell.
Yes. Yeah, so gay people are a gateway drug to gay dudes fucking Alex Jones's car.
Okay, there it goes. No, okay, you've really tied it together now.
Right,
yeah. I would fuck Alex Jones's car, but given the opportunity, to be fair.
No, you're right. Yeah, we all would. We all would.
Fair. I mean, I'm not sure what his opinion on dual exhaust would be. Pretty sure he'd be super confused, though, and also aroused, as much as that's possible with all the blood in his face. Anyway, regardless, We're obviously going to take a little time to help out the gay people with the marketing
scheme.
So let's put 10 seconds on the clock.
Because we can do whatever we want.
We can sometimes do this, sometimes not. Sometimes 10 seconds. You don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, ad slogans for the vehicular butt sex fuck robot. Obviously, go.
Oh, putting the bum back in Bumblebee.
The boy Yoda butt roller.
All right. No, I'll do one for Eli. Sexus, the relentless pursuit of a rectum.
More than meets the brown eye. Transformer.
And now that everybody's gotten their requisite weekly dose of Transformer porn in their mind, I suppose we can kill the hell lines right there. Heath, Eli, thanks as always.
Nope.
And when we come back.
Can't say any of that.
Just be beeps and stuff like that. Yeah, you can't even say the first syllable. And when we come back, the Nephites are fucked.
Dashing through the snow to send out all my gifts. Waiting in long lines, wading through snowdrifts. A better way to ship and send gifts home to mom is here and now. I have no fear because I'm using Stamps.com. Oh, Stamps.com, Stamps.com, shipping the easy way. Buy and print right at your desk and enjoy the holidays.
This holiday season, I'm using Stamps.com to send all my holiday gifts because it's easy, quick, and keeps me out of the cold. And right now, you too can enjoy Stamps.com service with a special offer that includes 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale without the long-term commitments. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in scathing. That's Stamps.com, enter scathing.
Oh, Stamps.com, Stamps.com, shipping the easy way. Buy and print right at your desk and enjoy the holidays.
When I logged on to Facebook on Monday, it came up with one of those little memories from a year ago where apparently I posted that I'd finally finished the goddamn Quran. That was December 11th of last year, and here it is December 14th, and we've still got 3 goddamn books to go in the Book of Mormon, so I'm not sure if the math holds up exactly, but I think we just scientifically proved that there's more bullshit in the Book of Mormon than even Muhammad could manage.
Yeah, and to be fair, Quran Peace Theater was just giving Heath moonshine and quaaludes and turning on the recorder. So it didn't work out.
One of my friends is a Jew, just for the record.
Just to be clear.
So everybody knows.
And of course, rejoining us after a sad and prolonged hiatus is my lovely wife, Lucinda. Lucinda, welcome back.
It's great to be back, except that part where I have to read the Book of Fucking Mormon.
Yeah, well, there's that. Speaking of which, we're actually going to be breaking down the titular Book of Mormon. That is the Book of Mormon in the Book of Mormon, which is titled Mormon.
Of course it is. So we start off by Mormon announcing that he is now writing the book, but he undercuts the shit out of his own account by admitting that he just started trying to remember shit when he was 10, but he didn't write any of it down for 14 years.
Right.
God's like, hey, Mormon, actually, never mind. We'll talk in a decade and a half.
Yeah. Well, Amaron hid this shit that we've read up to this point, and then he just plucks out a 10-year-old kid at random, and he says, hey, I perceive, and this is a quote, I perceive thou art a sober child and art quick to observe, end quote, and proceeds to give him a lifelong charge of recording Nephite history, because he's 10 years old and he's not on the bottle yet.
Okay, so what do you want to be when you grow up?
Oh, well, I was thinking I'd be a farmer or
a keeper of the Nephite record for all of history. Great answer. I got an awesome surprise for you, buddy.
And if Mormon had to describe the lands of South Zarahemla back in those days in a single word, he'd go with megalopolis. In the 4th century CE in the Americas.
Yeah.
Bunch of Lamanites handing out CDs in Times Square.
So, pan of flute course. Band. War breaks out immediately with the Lamanites, but this time it's all out. It's the Nephites, the Jacobites, the Josephites, and the Zoramites going up against the Lamanites and the Lemuelites and the Insecticons and the Constructicons, all out fucking rumble.
So he sets up this war, then he says, and the Nephites won and there was peace for 4 years. Dismisses the whole war with a sentence so he can skip ahead 4 years to the next war.
Yeah, what?
Why? You gotta wonder why Joe, who... Very clearly, he made this all up.
Yeah.
Why would he need a war that didn't matter in his book? It's
again,
your book. Why would you put filler in your fictional book? Just go to the one that
matters. Yeah, exactly, right. But in this war, you see, the Nephites were being too stiff-necked and iniquitous, so the Lord didn't give them any cheat codes.
And of course, Mormon knows the cheat codes, but he's not allowed to give them to anybody because they're so stiff-necked.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Right. And he's 15 at this point, and he goes and, real quote, tasted and knew the goodness of Jesus, end quote.
Lovely. So Jesus can run for senator in Alabama, yeah. I guess. That's good to know.
Right. So Mormon goes to tell all the Nephites about tasting Jesus, but then, quote, my mouth was shut.
Nobody will ever believe you. I'm going to almost win. Yes. I mean, it's going to be way closer than you think.
Yeah, than possible. You want. Yeah. So speaking of which, the Lamanites start winning and the Gadianton robbers infest the place. And I want to draw attention to a bit in chapter 1, verse 18, because we encountered this before. The Gadiantons were burying their treasure all around, but God was so pissed at him that he made the underground slippery, so their treasure sunk down and they couldn't get it anymore. And I only point this out because it's been brought to my attention that this was a ruse people like Joe Smith would use when their dowsing stones or whatever would say treasure was in a certain place, and then they dug really far and it wasn't. Like, they turned to the sucker they duped into paying for the dig, and they say, well, God must have gotten pissed and made the underground too slippery, probably because you didn't believe in us hard enough. And that's an insight into Joey's mind that I think we should all, like, draw a circle around, take a moment with.
And that explains why nobody's ever found the Oak Island treasure. Yeah.
Right.
Mormon.
Yeah.
LDS people should really put some money into that. They should start digging.
But anyway, back in the story, witchcraft, sorcery, and magics are everywhere, and all of the lands of Nephi have gone to shit.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm just picturing ancient Mormon me shuffling cards while some guy conjures a demon, just like, okay, demon's pretty cool, but eight of diamonds?
No.
Damn it. Should have gone with demons.
So then we get to chapter 2, where the Nephites decide Mormons should lead their army. And that's a hell of a lucky coincidence considering, you know, him having been randomly chosen to write the history.
Yeah, right.
Lucky break for us, I guess.
Yeah. Right. Also lucky because he's not a prophet, right? Like, he hasn't done anything to deserve this.
No.
He hasn't done any prophecy. They were just like, hey, 15-year-old.
Yeah, exactly. And Mormon is such an inspiring leader, by the way, that at the age of 16, when his army meets the Lamanites in the field, the Lamanites say boo, and his guys, like, run to the hills and scatter.
Yeah, and they go north and west. So just remember, Canadians, they're just peaceful Mormons. That's how they happened.
That actually makes a lot of sense.
No, it does.
Right?
Yeah. I really don't get this book. Mormon is basically bragging about what a shitty general he is. This whole chapter is a list of battles he lost. But it's presented like, and you guys are so sinful that I got my ass kicked in Angola and Joshua and David.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Okay, so but then he finally wins a battle. He takes care to point out that his forces were outnumbered 42,000 to 44,000.
That's such a
You're just making shit up. Why not make it a significant number?
He's like, all right, 42,000 to 45,000. Well, no, hold on. Let's keep this book believable.
Please.
44,000. They'll believe that.
Exactly.
Be reasonable.
So the Nephites all repent, but they repent wrong, of course. So God still doesn't forgive them.
Yeah. See, according to the book, the problem was their sorrow was the sorrow of the damned. Quote, they did not come unto Jesus with broken hearts and contrite spirits, but they did curse God and wish to die, end quote. The Eli Bosnick story. Just saying. this book speaks to me, is what I'm saying. Yeah.
Now, this brings us to the point in the story where he turns 24 and has to go get the plates Amron hid. And it just so happens his army is retreating to that very spot. Huh. Very convenient.
Yeah. Pull over. This is perfect. I got to dig up some plates. They're literally right there. Oh, hello, Morgan Freeman.
Yeah, right.
Did you get a box or something? All right, cool.
And then the Nephites start winning battles and take back all the lands they lost. So that chapter meant nothing.
Nope.
No need for chapter 2.
Then chapter 3 starts with a 10-year break from all the battles. But sure enough, here come the Lamanites again because Joseph Smith literally never thought of another thing that could ever happen
exactly.
in his story.
It's just been that since page 1.
And
Jesus. And Mormon realizes that the people aren't godly enough, so we get a quick montage where he tries to Jesus them up a bit, but it's too little, too late.
All right, just chasing around a chicken with a crucifix on its neck.
painting them all white with rollers, and playing in the background.
But the Lamanites are super polite about the war here. But apparently their king sent a, we're going to attack you, Graham, before yes. it happened.
Okay, I'm going to attack. One, two, two.
And the Nephites win, again, despite all their iniquity. So Mormon God is proving himself to be wholly unnecessary for military victory, even in his own book.
Right, or it could have something to do with the Lamanite army having the enthusiastic consent approach to war. I'm just saying.
And then the Nephites get so haughty and wicked that Mormon takes his commission and goes home and refuses to lead the armies anymore.
Yeah, well, and Mormon's logic here is, he's like, look, I'm not going to keep bailing you out if you all don't join my religion afterwards. I would rather see you die and our people get wiped off the earth because I'm the good guy.
The good guy.
Yeah. God's like, all right, I'm going to kill everyone without a ball. And Mormon's like, okay, this is actually pretty funny. I'm taking my ball and I'm going home.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But instead of telling us what happened to the leaderless army in their next battle with the Lamanites, the book just takes an 8-verse Muhammad-like diversion to say, and by the way, don't think the Jews are getting off light in the afterlife just because Jesus had a mitzvah.
And because Joseph Smith completely lacks descriptive skills here, he tells us the blood and guts and shit couldn't be described, but assures us that the massacre is the most worst one in the whole book.
Yeah.
And lo, it came to pass that, phew, blah, boom, boom,
boom. Oh, no, no. Also, the Lamanites are burning women and children to their idols at this point. Now, I know the Nephites aren't tithing enough, their necks aren't as flexible as God likes, but he's starting to seem like a third-party voter here.
Just sitting up in heaven, so they're burning people, but Doug Jones doesn't support Medicare for all. I'm going to write in Mickey Mouse.
And just when it seems like the Nephites are going to win after all, they don't. Nope. And the Lamanites send out an army so big that they, quote, were not numbered because of the greatness of their number.
What?
End quote. So, infinity. That's how many of them there were. Infinity. It's
infinity warriors. Yeah. So, yeah, shit gets real. The Lamanites start winning for reals now. So, Mormon grabs the plates and hauls ass northward.
Yeah, to go find the plates that he already found a couple chapters ago?
Waste.
Maybe he's checking on... maybe he's checking on the backup plate. He's got like a backup plate.
That would make perfect.
You want those redundant. Yeah, that's good.
Exactly.
That's good.
All
right, we get to chapter 5 where Mormon goes around saying how super sorry he is about everybody's kids and wives getting burned to death and says he'll lead the army again now.
Yeah, of course, the people still didn't repent, and Mormon is a crappy leader even by his own telling, so that doesn't shift the fortunes of war or anything. The Nephites just continue to get their asses kicked, this time under Mormon.
Right.
Guys, Mormon's back. Let's all get our asses kicked for Jesus now. Yeah. Huh? That'll be a fun change.
And once again, Joey has to explain why he isn't telling you all of the awesome shit. He's got a whole bit where Mormon says, and the blood and guts were way cooler and gorier than I'm telling you. Trust me, they were way fucked up. But I'm not going to bore you with that shit anyway. More about how repentant everybody was.
Yeah. Which is followed, by the way, by a long monologue about how if only some righteous white Christian people should arrive in this land 1,000 years from now or so.
And by the way, if the abject racism of this book isn't clear enough, this part about the filthy Lamanites burning women and children as they murder all of the white people is Joseph Smith's fanfic origin story of the Native Americans.
Yeah, let's keep that in mind. Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah, the quote here is, for his people shall be scattered and shall become a dark, a filthy, and a loathsome people beyond the description of that which ever hath been amongst us. Yea, even that which hath been among the Lamanites, and this because of their unbelief and idolatry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fun fact about this part. It used to be in the description of the chapter in the Book of Mormon until 2010.
Jesus.
2010 really? Is when they took that description of Lamanites out of the official Book of Mormon.
Wow. Because they're progressive.
Just out of the chapter description.
Yeah, right. It's still there. Yeah.
And now it's time for the final fucking battle. We reach the hill of Camora, not Gomorrah, mind you. Camora.
Yeah, no.
Sorry, Joe, did you say that this place is called Camora?
Yeah, way worse than Gomorrah. Come, Aura, trust me.
So yeah, Mormon sends a final battle invite to the King of Lamanites, and he RSVPs, apparently.
Okay, wait, did he RSVP on Facebook? Because apparently that doesn't mean anything, Heath.
Dude, I said I was sorry. I made
so much bean dip.
How much bean dip did you think I was going to eat?
So much. So much.
At this point, Mormon buries the book he's writing.
Yeah, wait, no, wait. Good point. Yes.
At this point, midway through the chapter, he tells us about burying the book he's now writing.
Yes.
And then he carries on with what happened next.
And after I stopped writing this, yeah. And of course, this is when the Lamanites march through and kill all but 2 dozen of the Nephites.
Right. And let's talk about how impossible this is, right? So by the number Joseph gives, at least 1 million Nephites had to, quote, die by the sword, end quote, which again didn't exist yet, day and leave no trace.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, the Lamanites didn't have enough gasoline.
Lamanites don't burn that hot.
Yes. People in armor and shit must have been so biodegradable back then. They were forward thinking. It was a green economy.
I'm just telling you, wheat shields are underrated.
Must be. And when Mormon looks over the 100,000 plus slain Nephites, his reaction, of course, is to say, see, this is what you get for not being Christian, you stupid assholes.
That's right, because he's the good guy.
He's the good guy, yeah. But as if to prove the Mormons are the cockroaches of evangelism, even after the Lamanites kill hundreds of thousands of them, Mormon and his kid pop up to bitch at them for being so wicked and sinful.
He does!
Dude, we just killed 1 million of you. Are you kidding me?
Well, you missed me. Now stop being black or red or whatever. It's unclear.
And we cannot overemphasize how anti-Semitic this book gets in this chapter. Over and over again, it says, and don't forget, Jews killed Jesus. That was the Jews. And it's never for any reason, right? Like just all of a sudden and out of nowhere, it'll be like, and it came to pass that the Lamanites overrun us at Teancum. And if you think about it, the Jews started that war too. And we did regather our forces in the land of Shiblim.
I feel like Joe was denied a loan during this chapter.
Right. Mormon's wife holds a press conference. One of our lawyers helped kill Jesus, just so you know.
To be clear.
He also tells the Lamanites here, and in 1,100 years, white people will show up with a Bible, and it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, you should totally listen to those white people. There's also a quick aside about how, and if you believe in that book, that Bible, which you should, obviously you can't help but logically believe in this one, too.
And I guess it's only now that Joy realizes the buried plates thing creates a logistical issue here. So now Moroni takes over and he's like, oh, by the way, I'm writing extra plates now that I'll later bury with those first ones you read. Yes. So that this will make sense.
Right. But he mentions that he's like literally running out of room on the plates. He's like writing this shit in the margin.
Yes.
And you're allowed to be a Russian spy at the end.
And by the time he has a spare plate carving minute, the other 23 surviving Nephites have apparently been hunted down and killed. So now it's just him. He's the last one.
Moroni also wants to make it clear that there's still an even bigger apocalypse on the way. Mm-hmm. So, you know, God will have his revenge eventually.
Yeah.
One of these days.
And then we get this crazy awkward transition where he says, and now I'm talking to you, future people. I know it's going to seem weird for me to give contemporary commentary about your present day churches from 400 CE where I am and everything, but trust me, God showed me 1829 and you guys are all kinds of fucked up. Doing it right at all.
We did not need a Will and Grace reboot. That is the next 40 chapters. And we did. It's a great reboot.
He saves the last chapter for the atheist and the unbelievers, where he offers up such nuanced theological challenges like, I bet you won't be so atheist when the rapture happens, bitch.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. If God isn't real, what are you going to tell him when he comes back is an actual argument in this book.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you won't say that to his face. He also points out that being a Mormon is better than dwelling in hell for eternity, which is a slogan I think the LDS should have stuck with. Mormonism, at least a little more fun than hell.
Way more fun. Unless it's the hell from Bedazzled.
Yeah.
Oh,
Because of Elizabeth Hurley's giant boobs?
Yes, because of Brendan Fraser's giant boobs. What did you say? What did you say?
What did we say?
In his getting into heaven instructions here, he's sure to point out that being white helps.
Yeah.
Definitely a good thing.
He also points out that it's impossible to read the scriptures and not come away believing in them, which, I mean, we still got two chapters left. I don't want to prejudice or experiment here, but I'm having a healthy suspicion maybe he's wrong.
What we're saying is
I'm a Mormon.
Reserving judgment.
What?
He also points out that atheist God can't even perform miracles, so Mormon God would clearly beat him in a fight. The atheist right. God.
Another good apologetic that he offers up, if you don't believe in Christ, who do you think redeemed mankind's sin through their ultimate suffering? Checkmate.
And if you think that's stupid, wait until he gets to the, okay, then who's multiplied all those fishes bit a couple of verses?
Yeah, this chapter is slowly turning into a more honest version of the conversation your uncle is going to make you have at Christmas by the second.
Right.
There's also a mandate in here for Mormons to, quote, preach the gospel to every creature, end quote, which makes you wonder who ministers to termites and shit.
Right.
Heath, if you were a Mormon, you could be a missionary to dogs.
I'm so in. Had me at Mormon.
All right, so then we get a list of Christianity powers, including, but not limited to, spontaneous language genesis, casting out of devils, serpent immunity, invulnerability to poison, and infinite healing powers.
Testable claims.
But you can't look. Stop looking. It's the Mormon uncertainty principle. It's like peeing. It's just like peeing.
That's why I never look when I pee.
Gross. There's also an out of the blue ham-fisted thing in here about how they couldn't write their plates in Hebrew because they didn't have room. So they used Egyptian hieroglyphs to conserve space.
Yeah, what?
I get it. I mean, to be fair, this whole book pretty much fits into a single picture of a dude dickishly wagging his finger at the Cleveland Indians mascot. Like, that's the book. You don't need...
It's just that one hieroglyph. That means Book of Mormon. And that's where we're going to close things off for the night. Looks like we will not be able to wrap this fucking book up in 2017, which is a shame, because 2017 kind of owes us some good news eventually. But we're going to be back in 3 weeks with the Book of Ether, or we'll just huff ether instead. Find out in three weeks when the Book of Mormons returns. Before we lower the lights and put on something a little more comfortable tonight, I wanted to take a second to address some weird shit with Patreon. Earlier this month, they announced an upcoming change in how they were going to charge patrons, and it was a bad idea that got called out as such far and wide. And Patreon heard our voices. They backed off of the fee change. It's not going to happen. So if you canceled your pledge because of this, or if you made any changes to your pledge because of this, or if you were going to donate to Patreon and then you heard about all this and decided not to, the fee change will not be taking place. As a person that makes the bulk of his living through Patreon, this is kind of important to me. Anyway, that's all the blasphemy we've got for you tonight. We'll be back in 10,022 minutes with more. If you can't wait that long, be on the lookout for a brand new episode of our sister show, The Skeptocrat, debuting at 7 a.m. Eastern time on Monday. An even newer episode of our sister show's Hot Friend God Awful Movies, debuting 24 hours after that, and a yet even still newer episode of our half-sister show Citation Needed, debuting at noon Eastern on Wednesday. Obviously, I wouldn't be keeping in the spirit of the season if I neglected to thank Heath Enright for taking on a huge amount of my work while I was sick, and also taking on the huge amount of work he always just takes on because he's Heath. I need to thank the lovely Eli Bosnick for not quite saying anything that got us sued while I wasn't on GAM this week. I want to thank Andrew Torres of the Opening Arguments podcast for making sure of that. Also need to thank the lovely and talented Lucinda Lusions for kicking shit right back into gear when she got back, and also a kind of ridiculous number of presents under the tree for me. I need to thank her for that. Can't figure out what the long flat one is. No fucking clue. It's really weird shape. Also, I want to thank Corey from the Brainstorm podcast for providing this week's Farnsworth quote and demonstrating our show's international appeal in so doing. If you need a little bit more Canadian skepticism in your life, be sure to check the show notes for a link to his podcast. But most of all, of course, I want to thank this week's best people. Only I can't do it by name because all the changes with Patreon have caused a flurry of canceled pledges, adjusted pledges, and weird shit that's going to make it take at least another week for me to pick through and figure out what actually is and isn't a new pledge. But I promise I'll get you thanked by name and properly complimented next week. If I fail to, let me know and I'll correct it in an upcoming episode. Legal services for this podcast are provided by the law offices of P. Andrew Torres, and our audio engineer is Morgan Clark, and he also wrote all the music that was used in this episode, which was used with permission. If you have questions, comments, or death threats, you'll find all the contact info on the contact page at scathingatheist.com. was sexy.
Right on top.
That really was. You just drove it right in there, Eli. And sometimes you think you're going to need lube and you don't. And that was one of those moments. You just.
And I stopped understanding.
That was nice.
I fucking hate you.
It's going to make sense to like three listeners.
I cracked myself up with you, motherfucker.
All right. The important thing is that we're having fun. All right. Quick sketch.
All right. Well, that's official. You're the hype man for the intro forever now.
Hype man the intro
you,
from
there's
now
no
on.
Way around you not doing that forever now.
Just okay. So you know. Yeah.
All right.
Your words on the page. You can read the words on the page every time. It always will lead you correctly. You don't have to make up your own words.
You also fucked it up. So we're just going to, never mind. All right. This is take two.
Everything's. I feel like we should check if Christianity like quit the religion before we start the episode.
Yeah.
Everything's changing.
Maybe.
And now back to.
You guys don't even know. It's just space and then not.
Oh, we do two there. Two spaces there.
Why would there be two spaces?
Two lots, because it's a new segment. We're moving to. It's like the
who is
intro.
That for? Is that for us? We don't know that it's a new segment?
It's for proper formatting that we do the same.
Yeah, you know what? You're right, Eli. Why would we even need space there? We could just do that.
You'll never outdo me on the why do we need spaces thing. That is a gambit that will go right. That is the gay chicken of our show. You can put all the words together. Get rid of all the spaces now. I read my notes.
The preceding podcast was a production of Puzzle and a Thunderstorm, LLC, copyright 2017, all rights reserved.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.